You're listening to BreadboxMedia.com.
And I'm Chuck Coughlin here on Setting the Record Straight.
We're going to talk about some interesting Catholic lives, lives that are worth remembering to inspire us. You know, there's a play by Catholic author and very famous poet, Thomas Stearns Eliot. You know him as T.S. Eliot. It's called Murder in the Cathedral, and it tells the story of Thomas Becket. Let's take into consideration a much more brief version of that story. Thomas Becket was born in December of 1118, the son of a Londoner. He was well-educated, studied for a time in Paris, and in 1142, he was taken into Archbishop Theobald's household, gradually becoming Theobald's most trusted advisor. He met many great men and developed skills as a diplomat and speechwriter. He was ordained a deacon. William the Conqueror had enforced a good deal of state control over the Catholic Church in England, and Thomas moved back and forth between the political and ecclesiastical worlds. Thomas became close friends with the heir to the throne, who was crowned King Henry II in 1154. Though he did not get along as well with Henry's wife, who was none other than Eleanor of Aquitaine, who had married the English prince after the annulment of her marriage to Louis. Henry appointed Thomas Lord High Chancellor, the highest office in England, next to the king himself, and the two were practically inseparable. Because of his high position, Thomas had a household of 700 knights, and he once personally led them into battle in France. In 1162, the Archbishop of Canterbury died. Henry pressed Thomas to take the appointment as the new archbishop. While Thomas had serious doubts about that, though he was quite worldly, he also had a sensitive conscience. He knew that the close ties between the Catholic Church and state in England could lead to serious problems, and he did not wish to come into conflict with his close friend. Finally, he agreed, providing he could resign as chancellor. He was ordained and consecrated archbishop. Almost immediately, a change came over Thomas, as the grace of the office had a profound effect on him. He became less worldly, more prayerful, and used the discipline. That's a small whip. He would say that he had been transformed from a patron of actors and a follower of hounds to a shepherd of souls. Before dawn each morning, he would call 13 poor men into his private rooms. Thomas would personally wash their feet and serve breakfast to them, giving each 4 silver coins. He doubled the amount of alms his predecessor had given to the poor, using money he had formerly spent on luxuries. Thomas's new moral concerns led him inevitably to clash with Henry. Their first quarrel arose over a financial matter. Henry decided to keep for himself a tax formerly collected by sheriffs. Thomas opposed the move, arguing that it was a mistake to deprive the men on whom Henry depended for honest and efficient government of an important source of income. It would encourage them to get more money unjustly. Thomas ordered his bishops to refuse to pay this tax on church lands to Henry. Henry then retaliated by abolishing the privilege of the church's ecclesiastical courts to try clerics accused of secular crimes. But Thomas would not back down. Henry was never known for his even temper, was furious. He seized Thomas's land and castles and removed his young son from Thomas's tutelage. At a meeting with Thomas, the king accused the archbishop of ingratitude. Thomas assured Henry that his friendship was still strong, but that, quote, "we must obey God rather than men," unquote. Others tried to persuade Thomas to give in. After all, the issue was not a major point. But Thomas knew that the controversy was larger than the single point of which courts should try clerics accused of secular crimes. He knew that the issue was the same that Gregory VII had confronted with Henry IV. Would the church be able to exercise its moral authority over secular rulers? Or would the government come to control the church? The two men met again at Clarendon. Henry presented Thomas with decrees which would have taken away many of the church's rights. Thomas refused to sign them, of course, but Henry proceeded to enforce them anyway. Finally, Henry had Thomas brought to trial. He rigged the court so that Thomas was found guilty of treason. When the verdict was announced, Thomas simply stalked out of the courtroom. No one dare lay a hand on him because the common people were totally on his side. Henry soon sent troops after Thomas, but on a stormy night, the archbishop escaped. He sailed to Flanders in a small boat over rough seas, taking refuge in a Cistercian monastery. Again, Henry retaliated, sending everyone associated with Thomas, including their families, into exile and seizing their possessions. He also threatened the Cistercians with the seizure of their lands in England if they continued to harbor Thomas. The abbot urged Thomas to stay, but Thomas did not want to jeopardize the whole order. He went on to the Benedictine Abbey of Sens in north-central France, which was under the protection of King Louis VIII, who cared for Henry about as little as he cared for Henry's queen. A friend said to Thomas, "As for the king, he seems to want nothing but your head on a platter." Finally,